Welcome everyone to a Baseball America podcast along with Aaron Fitt live in Omaha. I'm John Manuel back in North Cackalack. I want to remind you that this and every Baseball America College podcast is brought to you by ATEC. ATEC, I think you all know the drill. ATEC is the training machine company, and they've been bringing you all of Baseball America's college podcasts throughout the year. Probably the last one of the year, Aaron. I don't think we'll debrief each other when the series is over, but we have a College World Series finals, and I think we're very excited to have that one. Arizona, undefeated in this College World Series, preseason number 5, ran through its bracket with a victory over UCLA, sandwiched between victories against Florida State, won a tight one in 12 innings, one that was over in the first, essentially. And in the other bracket, the two-time defending national champion, South Carolina, kind of the Rocky Balboa of this of the College World Series era that we're in right now. Certainly, there have been some teams, Aaron, that are a little bit more Clubber Lang or a little bit more Apollo Creed, that have more tools. But no one is more a Rocky Balboa and just a flat-out bunch of winners like the South Carolina team. And it's an amazing story, Aaron, of South Carolina over the last 3 years in the College World Series. 15-2, won their first game against Florida, then lost the second game to Arkansas and Ryan Stanek, and battled its way back to the loser's bracket, beating Kent State and then Arkansas twice. It feels like, Aaron, that South Carolina is once again the story of the College World Series because of this this group, this Michael Roth, Matt Price-led group that just can't be killed in the College World Series.
They can't be. It's really uncanny, you know, and I think we've all run out of words to describe this group a long time ago, and I keep trying. You know, I kind of wrote a piece the other day trying to put Roth's College World Series career into historical perspective, and yesterday I did the same thing with Price. And I think you've got the best, you know, the most accomplished starting pitcher in College World Series history in Roth, and you've got the most accomplished closer in Price. I mean, Matt Price, John, in his career in the College World Series, has pitched about 25 innings now, 24 and two-thirds. He's given up one run. He's given up one extra base hit. He struck out 33. He hasn't given, you know, he's riding a 19-inning scoreless streak in the series into this finals. I mean, it's unbelievable what these guys have done, you know, and they get to this stage and they become even better than they already are, and they're good to begin with. But, you know, it is the big story, you know, and I think Arizona had kind of a good approach about that today in the press conference. They were, you know, kind of joking a little bit about how, you know, South Carolina is what they've done is amazing, and you know they have all the fan support, and you know Robert Ruff Snyder was talking about how he went into the fan fest looking for T-shirts, and all the other teams were sold out, but nobody bought any Arizona T-shirts, and you know they kind of got that thing going a little bit, that under the radar kind of approach that I feel like suits a lot of teams well in sports. I mean we see that over and over again. That it's not quite a no respect card. I mean Arizona didn't go down that road. For sure, but you know you can tell that they have a lot of respect for the Gamecocks. They understand why the Gamecocks get all the attention that they do, and they probably feed off of that.
I think that's a good point. The no respect card, it only feels like fans play that card. Teams don't feel like they really play that card. They might say it. I really don't think they play that card. Like you said, they like being under the radar. They like having expectations low. You know, I think it's more fun to have expectations low, and it's easier to exceed those expectations than it is to be the heavy favorite and have that burden. We've kind of seen that played out a little bit with Florida the last couple of years there, and I don't feel like Florida was the heavy favorite last year. I feel like the Gators were the favorite this year. Let's touch on the rest of the field real quick. I mean, the number one and number two national seeds were Florida and UCLA, and obviously – Florida was our preseason number one. Did you feel like the Gators didn't want to be in Omaha, or do you feel like they just got beat by a better team and maybe this in South Carolina just played a little tight that next game against Kent?
You know, it's hard to say. I mean, you know, it's so difficult, I think, to sum up Florida's season and to try to put it into perspective, because any team that gets to Omaha, I don't care what the expectations are, I'm not going to call them a failure, you know, and I think there's this rush.
Yeah, that's a great year, no doubt.
I think there's this rush to kind of dub Florida that way among people who thought this team should have done better. And they certainly could have done better, but you're in the College World Series, you know, 3 years in a row, that's a pretty darn good run. And, you know, you get here and you come out flat and you get beat. I mean, they were certainly flat out here. I mean, I think that there's no, whether you want to call them tight or what, I don't know. I mean, you start getting into that psychological stuff. It's a gray area, but they were flat. And I don't think they played very well. Certainly not as well as they're capable of playing. And you know, and that's one of the things that's so remarkable about South Carolina is they come out here and they're, it seems like they're almost never flat. You know, I mean, it's hard to get out here and play your best baseball. You have to have a special kind of makeup. And, you know, I was talking with a North Carolina fan the other day, and, you know, he was talking about how North Carolina's won, you know, two games here in the last four trips. South Carolina's won three games in the last 2 days. I mean, it's just, you know, getting here is great. It's hard.
Wow.
But winning here is something else.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I mean, I think the thing with Florida to wrap them up is that I don't think you can call their season a disappointment except in the context of they were better last year. I think that's true. I think they won more games. They were better in the SEC. They were better in Omaha. So in that, if you want to call it a disappointment only in context of comparing it to last year and that it was most of the same guys, they weren't as good as last year, I think that's fair. I think that's the only real, to me, fair criticism is that Florida was very good this year. They weren't as good as they were last year. They didn't have nearly the same accomplishments. I think last year they won the SEC tournament, first time in 20 years that they'd done that. Didn't accomplish that this year. So, I don't think that Stony Brook had a bad year just because, or even had a bad postseason because they were terrible in Omaha. I mean, obviously their run a little bit less expected of them, but they were pretty bad in Omaha here, and it would have been embarrassing if not for the fact that they won 2 out of 3 the week before at LSU. Kent State, yeah. Very plucky. UCLA, a little disappointing. I think UCLA, very disappointing in Omaha. And then they didn't hit. What we really saw the two brackets were a South Carolina team that just, I'm not trying to oversimplify because obviously Jordan Montgomery was awesome. But to beat South Carolina, you're going to have to beat Roth or Price. And no one's done it yet in the postseason. They've won 15 games in the last 3 years in Omaha. Those two guys have combined 9 wins. I know wins aren't the greatest stat. Even Matt Price said I've kind of vultured some. But he's been in all these close games, and his team always wins them. I think that he has something to do with that. And meanwhile, we have Arizona. I mean, I'm trying to oversimplify a little bit. Go ahead.
I was just going to correct myself also that just because I mentioned that North Carolina stat before. What I meant to say is they won – 2 games here in the last 4 years. That includes a couple of Omaha trips. But
right.
You know, I mean, the point is, it is hard to win here. And you know, I just think that's why I think John, you and I both picked South Carolina to beat Arkansas, even though you know it seemed improbable on paper. I mean, for this team to come back through the losers bracket again against a better rested team, just like it did in 2010. You know, you have the disadvantages when you come through the losers bracket, especially when there's a rainout. You got to play. Again, 3 games in 2 days. It's on paper, it doesn't make sense that team should have the advantage. But you and I both picked South Carolina for both those games because of those intangibles, the things you can't wrap your arms around. And it's what makes this group so special.
Yeah, I mean, the intangibles was a big reason. There were a couple tangible reasons that I picked them as well. I just think they're a little bit better offensively than Arkansas is. It didn't really play out that way because I thought those couple of their runs were kind of gift runs. But Arkansas just never broke through offensively. What was the most runs they scored in a game in the Cowboys series? 4? 3?
It was something
it was
like
four
that.
4 games?
Yeah.
They won a game with two runs. Oh, well, I guess I stand corrected. They scored what, 5 against Kent State?
8. They scored 8 against Kent State.
But it was 3 against South Carolina. Okay, they scored 8 against Kent State. So they scored 8 against Kent State, and I'm looking at their statistics here, and they scored 12 overall. So they scored 4 in 3 games against South Carolina. I mean, I ain't going to get it done, umpire or not. And the umpiring, I think everyone felt, the home plate umpire, was very inconsistent in the bracket championship. There's no doubt that he had an impact on the game. But the bottom line is they had – yes, South Carolina had to beat them twice, and they did it. The home plate umpire did not – screwed them in both games. Arkansas needed to score more off Jordan Montgomery, a freshman left-hander making his first outing in the Cowboys series, and Randall Fant didn't get the job done. The bullpen held it, but he had eight innings more after that to score if you're Arkansas, and they didn't get the job done. So kudos to the Razorbacks for finally somewhat living up to that preseason number four ranking. Now we have preseason number three and preseason number five. Obviously, the two-time national champions here and are a little bit more of a known commodity. The casual fan has seen them on the College World Series stage for 3 years. Arizona, first time. Not a lot of people watched their Super Regional because it was in the broad daylight and it was almost blinding just to watch. It was Arizona St. John's. Now here in the College World Series, they played three games, are a little spaced out, and the Florida State game, the first one was excruciatingly long. It started very late at night. The second game against UCLA was a very crisp game, extremely well pitched by Connor Wade. The third game, they just blew out Florida State. We've basically seen, you know, three pitchers. We've seen Kurt Heyer for 14-plus. We've seen Connor Wade for a CG. And we've seen a little bit of Matt Troop and a little bit of Crawford, the left-hander. How does the pitching set up for both these clubs? And then let's go into Arizona's strengths and weaknesses and then South Carolina's strengths and weaknesses. How does Arizona's pitching set up first?
Well, obviously, Arizona's in better shape for game one because you got Connor Wade rested, ready to go, coming off a gem in his last start against, UCLA, I believe.
He shoved it against UCLA. I mean, he was awesome.
He really did. He was outstanding. It was, I think, the best he's probably ever pitched, complete game shutout. You know, so you got to give them the edge in that game. South Carolina doesn't even know who they're going to pitch in the first game. It'll either be Forrest Kumis, Nolan Belcher, or Evan Beal. I think Kumis or Belcher, just talking to people, it seems like the sentiment is it's going to be one of those two guys. And, you know, Kumis has pitched in the College World Series before, and he's certainly capable, but he also has been dealing with elbow issues, so you don't really know what you're going to get out of him. And Belcher, the left-hander, I mean, I don't know that he's a great matchup for Arizona. They're very right-handed heavy. So I think, not that you can't beat them with a good lefty, but, I mean, Belcher hasn't pitched much in the postseason at all. I just think that you got to give Wade the edge in the first game. In the second game, you're probably looking at the two aces coming back on 3 days' rest. And, you know, even though Roth threw a complete game against Arkansas on Thursday, he threw fewer pitches than Kurt Heyer did. You know, I mean, I still don't understand why Andy Lopez left Heyer out there in a 9-run game in the middle of the heat. Take him out after 5 innings. You know, he's got the win. You really need to send him out there for 122 pitches when you know you're going to need to bring him back for the finals. I mean, with the 9-run lead, if you don't trust your bullpen to hold a 9-run lead, I don't know what to tell you.
Yes,
but I just didn't understand that. That puts them in a little bit of a, you know, a not as good a position as they would have been, I think. I know Heyer's got a resilient arm. Lopez didn't say whether Heyer's going to pitch the second game or not. I mean, he certainly probably pitched one of those two games. If this thing goes to three, you'd imagine he would start the third game. The other guy in the mix is James Ferris, the number three starter, and he hasn't pitched since regionals 3 weeks ago because they won their Super Regional in 2 games. They won their bracket in 3 games, you know, without having to go to their number three starter. So, you know, there's the issue of rust with him. Meanwhile, South Carolina can bring back Jordan Montgomery for game three. He'll be on 4 days rest. So, I mean, you know, maybe once you get past the first game, it might set up better for the Gamecocks.
I think it does because, you know, game one, Nolan Belcher is basically well known for his pregame backflip, correct?
Yep.
I mean,
that's
his shtick. So he fires the team up. Got to imagine that they're not going to let him do a pregame backflip if he's starting the game. You know, he'll be in the bullpen before he does his pregame backflip. Evan Beal has pitched twice in the postseason. He's gotten 4 outs. Last time he appeared, I think he faced 2 batters against Clemson, gave up a run. That was in the regional. So South Carolina is at a distinct disadvantage, I think, in that first game. Doesn't mean they won't win it. You know, they are South Carolina. But if Connor Wade comes out and pitches like he did against UCLA, I think Arizona's in good shape. You know, like you said, the rest of it after that, you're going to have to beat Roth. And Montgomery was very, very good against Arkansas. I will say Arizona, Aaron, let's talk about their offense. We've talked about them all year as a very dynamic, athletic team. that has really played out in Omaha. I feel like you've been quite vindicated in that. It's not like you need it. But Arizona, you want to crown them because they are who we thought they were. Very athletic, very explosive offensively, and two really good pitchers. You know? I mean, most of the year they were one really good pitcher, but we've seen good Connor Wade. You know, we saw good Connor Wade. But offensively, between Robert Refsnyder, Mejia, Rickard, now you've seen Brown. Johnny Field hasn't even had a great Omaha, but he seems like he's had a couple of key plays when they needed him. This is a team that's scoring runs, even in TD Ameritrade Park, and they're averaging 6 runs a game. Obviously, the big explosion against Florida State, and it didn't hurt the Florida State's offense. I mean, that defense kind of imploded, but this team is aggressive but draws walks, as Mike Martin talked about. They steal some bags. They hit the gaps. They showed a little home run power. They had the 2 home runs against Florida State. Is their offense, even with South Carolina's, better, a lot better? How do you like this matchup for them against South Carolina from the offensive standpoint?
I do think it's a lot better. You know, I don't think that's overselling it. I mean, South Carolina has been having to, you know, scratch out runs wherever it can. I mean, they're hitting .229 in the series in 5 games. You know, they've been able to manufacture runs when they need them, but there's no question that Arizona is the better offensive team. It's not even close. I mean, you're talking about one team. Arizona is 6th in the nation in scoring this year, you know, 7.5 runs a game. The other team, South Carolina, is 153rd in the nation in scoring, 5.4 runs a game. They average 2 runs fewer. I mean, it's, you know, it's apples and oranges that you're comparing these offenses. You know, and again, I do think that because Arizona is so right-handed hitter heavy, you know, I mean, most of their key guys, Mejia and Mejia Spreen and Johnny Field and Refsnyder and Richter, they're all right-handed hitters. And you know, South Carolina has really leaned on its lefties. I mean, between Roth and Montgomery, and then, you know, Tyler Webb as well. I mean, in the bullpen, those have been 3 of their 4 key guys, with Matt Price being the other guy. That said, you know, Montgomery and Roth both have good changeups, and so they're good against right-handed pitchers. You know, both those guys, I think the changeup was probably their best pitch, certainly their best secondary pitch. So, you know, I don't know that the righty-lefty matchup issue will be such a huge factor against those guys, but it's something to consider. I mean, if you're facing a bunch of good righties, I mean, typically you want a good righty on the mound.
Right. It is amazing to me that Arizona has scored as many runs as it has scored in Omaha, with only, you know, they have 6 extra base hits, I think it is. I mean, it's basically been a slashing, singles-hitting approach offensively, and they'll steal a few bases like we talked about. And I'll tell you, individual players, I've been very impressed with Alex Mejia in person and now on TV. The energy he plays with, the way he just they're very good at shortstop defensively. Not like Joey Pancake's bad. But Alex Mejia is a steady impact 12 player of the year for a reason. You could see it. I'll tell you who else impresses me for Arizona. I'm not saying he's one of their 2 best players, but just who's impressed me is Riley Moore, their catcher. He can hit. He's a weapon. Yeah. And he's one of those left-handed hitters you're talking about, kind of lurking toward the bottom of that lineup. And you relax, and Riley Moore, I think, can sting the line drive. He draws walks. Arizona's lineup's quite good. Like you said, Aaron, the real question is, you know, why they left Hyer out there in that blowout against Florida State, because you could have used Crawford for an inning or two. You could have given Ferris an inning or two. You had True back there who could have used the work and then would have had a couple days off before the final started. You had a 9-run lead. It all doesn't add up. But outside of the way he's handled Kurt Hyer, it feels like Andy Lopez has done a pretty nice job with this club, because he knows what they do well, and he knows that the artichokes are his team's weakness in the bullpen, and he's minimized that to a degree, and he's got those guys. I thought Crawford and Troop both pitched pretty well and looked good in both those games against Florida State. Although I guess he didn't even use Troop in the second game, right? He just used him in the first game.
Right, exactly. You talked about Riley Moore, you talked about Troop. These freshmen for Arizona have been kind of under the radar because the junior class gets so much attention, and deservedly so. But how about Trent Gilbert at second base, another freshman that I think has played really well out here? I mean, he's made a lot of slick plays, and he hasn't stood out. Maybe he hasn't been overly flashy, but he's been very steady for them, which is what they need out of him. And he's gotten a couple of big hits too. He had, I think, a 2-run single or double in the Florida State game to help break that game open. And he's a good player as well. So I mean, that's another guy that certainly stood out to me. I love how much ground they cover in the outfield. I mean, Rickard, Field, and Ref Snyder. Those guys can really track it down out there. We talked about how good the infield is before. If you compare that with South Carolina, and we talked about how big this park is, how you have to be able to cover ground in the outfield. And South Carolina is also, I mean, they've probably got the fastest outfield out there, with the rangiest anyway. With English and Matthews are both above average, or well above average runners in English's case. And then Evan Marzilli is, I think, one of the most electrifying defenders that I've seen in a long time. I think he's as good as Jackie Bradley Jr. out there. John, am I crazy?
No, you're not crazy. I think Evan Marzilli, I tweeted last week. I mean, he's a player I've undersold for a couple of years. I mean, he's really good. I mean, maybe he doesn't have a standout carrying tool from a pro standpoint. Maybe the pro guys wonder just how much offensive impact he'll have, but I don't have much question. That guy's going to be a future leadoff guy in center field, or he fits the profile. I love Evan Marzilli. The crazy thing to me about South Carolina, Aaron, is it feels like the more tools you have, the more you fit a pro profile. So other than Marzilli, the less they rely on you, because LB Dantzler swings and misses a lot, but I mean, he's a really good college power hitter, and he's a four-hole guy for them. Christian Walker doesn't have profile power, but I mean, I know he missed one last night and, left some ducks on the pond, but I mean, Christian Walker's been Christian Walker for them. Roth and Montgomery, they may not, I might be able to catch them barehanded, but those guys hit their spots and they pitch in, they angle, and I mean, they're unhittable, especially Roth. It's just amazing to me that all their best players, with maybe the exception of Marzilli and to a lesser extent Price, because he's like a sixth-rounder last year, and then I guess Jackie Bradley Jr. But throughout this run, their best players have been guys who are great college players like Blake Cooper and Michael Roth. And there's outside of Jackie Bradley, there's nary a pro guy in the mix. Have I missed the obvious pro guy in there?
I mean, Sam Dyson had a big arm. He was a part of that first title team, but I don't know how his pro career has progressed. But I mean, you're right. They don't have a lot of those elite prospects. I mean, it's just
and they're guys right now. The guys with the pro tools right now are guys like Adam Matthews and Tanner English, who really aren't very refined players. And Matthews is a senior. I'm not sure how much more refined he's going to get. And English is very raw. I mean, I know he was a borderline top 200 guy last year. It tells you how talented he is, that at 5'8", the pro scouts were really interested in him. And he was a borderline top 200 guy. I ended up leaving him off because of the size and because he's a right-handed hitter. But I didn't think he fit the profile. But he's raw. I mean, if he'd signed last year, he would be debuting in the GCL this year. Not, he'd be in the Gulf Coast or Arizona League, and he might go to the Appy League or the Pioneer League next year. I mean, he's raw. He would not be ready for full season ball.
He's put together some very, very uncompetitive at-bats out here. He'll strike out 3 times in a row. He did this, I think, a couple of games ago, struck out 3 times in a row, looked horrible doing it, and then all of a sudden he hit a big RBI double. He's come up with some big plays. But I'll tell you what else. I want to talk about Joey Pancake for a second here at shortstop, John.
Please do.
This guy has been a standout defensively here. And he's done a good job, I think, atop the lineup. I mean, I feel like he has provided them a little bit of a spark in Omaha.
He gives them competitive at bats.
But yeah,
but like you said, he's not an automatic out in that he competes at the plate. He's different from English. I there's a distinction there, even though English is technically is 5-for-19 and Pancake 3-for-21. Pancake, I feel, has been the better hitter out there.
Maybe that's I don't know, but it's just I agree with you. I had that same perception. But the biggest thing is the defense with Pancake. I mean, he's done a really good job making plays up the middle, throwing on the run, making plays in the hole. He's got that ridiculous rifle arm, and he likes to use it, and he's been accurate with it. I mean, his emergence has been such a key for the Gamecocks because, in the beginning of the year, he wasn't nearly as consistent. And, you know, you're replacing a really good shortstop with Peter Mooney. And, you know, before that, of course, you had Haney at short. And you need a good shortstop. I mean, it's so obvious, but it's true. You need a guy who you can trust to make the plays in tight games. And for a while in the season, he wasn't that. And he has become that. And it's not easy to be a freshman shortstop in the SEC or anywhere else in college baseball. I mean, there's a learning curve there. And he's handled it. You know, I think you got to give him a lot of credit.
I'm glad that you said that because early in the year, it sounded like he was a weakness for that team. And I think now he's a strength. That's the easy way to put it. Chase Ferguson, a strength, hot hitter for them in the postseason. He's been clutch for them. And they have some depth. They have some depth in this lineup because they come off the bench with either a Martin or a Payne, and they both have given them solid at-bats. Not all the way, not totally consistent. I mean, there's a reason those guys aren't everyday players. Yeah, Payne has a 33-3 strikeout-to-walk ratio or whatever it is. So, I mean, Ray Tanner's Ray Tanner. I mean, he only has one more championship than Andy Lopez, but Andy Lopez, to be quite frank with you, hadn't won a title in 20 years. And to be very candid with you, Aaron, he handled this team very well, but he did a very curious thing in the handling of Curt Hire. Whereas, be honest with you, I don't think Ray Tanner's made one mistake in 3 years at Omaha. It doesn't feel like it. He feels like King Midas. I mean, to be quite honest with you, I like Andy Lopez, but I'm going to give the edge of coaching to Ray Tanner.
You have to. I mean, just every move that the guy makes is just the right move. And there was a lot of gnashing of teeth among South Carolina fans when Tanner decided to start Ross in the first game against Kent State, knowing that you had to win two games in that day. We should save Ross for the SEC team. I mean, that was kind of the perception I heard a lot of from South Carolina fans. And look, you got to trust Ray Tanner, first of all. I mean, you got to win the first game in order to have a second game. Arkansas had handled Ross pretty well in the past, and it was the right move. I mean, the guy knows his personality. He's got such an incredible intuition, and it's just and it's not just the moves that he's made. I mean, certainly I wrote about this last night, but the move that he made to put Matt Price in the bullpen midway through the season was probably the key of the whole deal. But also, it's the moves he hasn't made, you know, sticking with Adam Matthews because they were winning anyway, and he has faith in that player. He's a senior guy. He's a co-captain. He knows that this guy makes winning plays when it matters, like the catch he made down the right field line, you know, sliding on that sacrifice fly last night, saved at least a run. And then there's, I know he had a bad game, a couple of bad at-bats there, left some guys on base, two of his first three trips yesterday, and then he gets the base loaded walk to win the game. So, it's a matter of trusting your older players and making a move when you have to make a move and knowing when not to.
Couldn't have said it better myself. I think you're exactly right. A lot of his best moves have been the ones he didn't make, like you said, and leaving Adam Matthews alone, I agree, good move. Just leaving Joey Pancake out there. One thing you have to give, I think, South Carolina a lot of credit for, we do it in pro ball with player development. South Carolina has player development that goes on at that, in that program. And maybe not from a pro development standpoint, but their players get better. Christian Walker is a much better defender at first base now than he was as a freshman when he was a little bit of a stiff. Joey Pancake, like you talked about this year, his development. Tanner English is still raw, but he competes enough that in that fourth at bat, after he's given away the first three, he's still out there helping your team win. Grayson Griner, much better player defensively now than he was early in the year when he almost had the yips. So LB Dantzler, another example. I mean, you go on and on in this team with player development, and no one has developed more than Michael Roth from, situational left-hander to now basically the best pitcher in College World Series history. And I don't think there's a question that he's the best pitcher in College World Series history. His numbers are certainly buoyed by the new park the last 2 years. But, oh, by the way, in 2010, he was at Rosenblatt with the old bats, and he threw a complete game and then five more innings on 3 days rest. And so he was pretty doggone good then, too. So we've said so many great things about Roth and Price. Again, as I tweeted last night, if you want to beat South Carolina, if you want to dethrone this dynasty, you're going to have to go through those two guys. Aaron, I'm putting you on the spot. Can Arizona do it? Will Arizona do it, I guess? I know we can. They can do it. Will they do it is a better question.
Oh, boy, it's tough. I mean, You know, I've gone back and forth on this thing right up until the moment you asked that question. But I'm going to say no. I think South Carolina three-peats.
I think that South Carolina is a very good bet to three-peat. I am going to pick Arizona, though, because I do feel the pitching sets up a little bit better for them. I do feel that they're right-handed enough. I feel they're offensive enough that they're going to score enough runs to be competitive over these three games. But I'll tell you what, they better get it done in the first two. If they don't get it done in the first two, especially if they don't get it done in the first game, they're not going to win the series. But I'll incur all the wrath that anybody wants to give to me. I'm picking Arizona. I just feel they're a little bit more dynamic, a little bit more athletic, a lot more athletic. But, I mean, I think it's, you know, like I said, South Carolina three-peats. I will say, if they three-peat, Aaron, it's the most amazing thing I've seen in college baseball in the 15 years I've been covering it. Just getting to the finals 3 years in a row in the current setup. I mean, you know, Stanford got there three times in 4 years, in 99, 2001, 2002. Now, I guess it was actually, wait a minute, 2000, 2001, 2003, something like that. They got there three times in 4 years. I thought that was as good a run as I've seen anyone have without winning it. And two of those losses were single game losses, you know, in the old format. But, I mean, South Carolina with the current format and then the best out of three, it's unfathomable that they could three-peat again with really, where you're not going to look back, I don't think, and say, well, here was this big leaguer. I mean, I think Michael Roth is a big leaguer, but I think he's like a Josh Spence type of big leaguer. I'm borrowing Matt Eddy's comparison in our office. He's going to be a situational lefty. You know, is Matt Price a big leaguer? I don't know.
Yes.
Most big league closers have bigger stuff than that, you know. You think he is a big leaguer?
I think he's gonna will himself there. I mean, I don't think he's gonna be an impact big leaguer though.
Yeah, so I mean most of the time, I mean you look back at USC at Southern California's dynasty, and it was big leaguer after big leaguer back in 70 to 74. It was guys like Steve Kemp and Rich Dower and Roy Smalley, and I mean it was loaded with big leaguers. You know, that was whole USC's whole shtick, was that it was a bunch of big league players. You look at LSU's dynasty in the you know, 91 to 2000, that 5 titles in 10 years. Obviously, a lot of names changed, but there were a lot of pretty good big leaguers there. Todd Walker, the guy who jumps out. I know there were a couple other pitchers who wound up in the big leagues for them. But a lot of them were fringier, good college players. Eddie Furness at first base, who I think set the SEC home run record that lasted for a long time. I think Matt LaPorta broke his record. Ed Yarnall, these kind of guys. Brad Cressy, the clip we've all seen on the NCAA thing. Like, for whatever reason, the NCAA is showing these highlights of champions. And the one they're showing from the College World Series is from the year 2000 with LSU, which is really, really very strange. But that team, that 2000 team, had Terrio and Fontenot in the middle infield. Those guys have been in the big leagues for, you know, 8 years now. Probably 16 combined seasons in the big leagues for Terrio and Fontenot. So they, you know, they're pretty good big league players. Russ Johnson was there in their career earlier there. I mean, they had a lot of big leaguers. More than South Carolina is going to produce, I think. And I just think they've won it in two different eras. They've won it loser's bracket. They've won it as a favorite. And they've beaten great teams. UCLA 2010, Bauer and Cole, that was a great team. Florida last year, that was a great team. If they beat Arizona, Arizona's a very good team. I don't know if I'm putting them in great, but a very good team, a very complete college baseball team, especially offensively and with the glove. So if South Carolina accomplishes it, I mean, honestly, there's so many more teams that try now, I think it'd be the greatest accomplishment in college baseball history. It would be more impressive to me than Southern Cal winning 5 in a row. So even though I'm not picking them, it doesn't mean I don't recognize their greatness.
It's different era, and because there's so much more competition, and you know so many more teams like you said that try, that really, you know, devote resources to this thing. And it's not just, you know, obviously the SEC itself. I mean, if you're the 7th or 8th best team in the SEC, you still might be an Omaha team. Just ask Arkansas. You know, we got two northern teams here this year. I mean, good northern teams. And it's harder for northern teams to get here now than it was in the 70s when the system kind of built it in that way. So that just shows
right.
you the fact
really
that northern teams
you.
can it shows you that northern teams getting here now means that there's a lot of good teams in college baseball. The talent is more spread out than it used to be. It's just, I think it's so much more impressive to win it now than it was 40 years ago.
I want to thank everyone for your patience during this podcast. We had some technical issues. Hope you enjoyed the podcast despite those. This Baseball America College podcast is sponsored by ATEC, the baseball training machine company. At ATEC, we're committed to delivering tools to coaches to help train and develop players. Visit ATECsports.com to learn about training machines that can help make your practice more effective and efficient. See training tips and practice drills from Vanderbilt head coach Tim Corbett and more on ATECsports.com. ATEC, win every practice. For Aaron Fitt, I'm John Manuel. We'll see you next time at the Baseball America podcast. So long, everybody.